He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Thrill is gone. Thrill is gone away. Thrill is gone, baby. Thrill is gone away. You done me wrong, baby. Gonna be sorry someday. Thrill is gone. Thrill is gone away from me. Thrill is gone. Thrill is gone away from me.
The thrill is gone, B.B. King, the legendary King of the Blues.
But so lonely.
Died last night in Las Vegas, 89 years old, had a great run. I was so happy that I got to see B.B. King perform several times over the years. B.B. King. Today we're going to play a lot of B.B. How you doing this morning? I'm Geraldo. Noam Layden is also. You have to be my co-host here on 77 WABC at 866-GERALDO, 866-437-2536. I'm going to need some help to get through. On Friday, thank God it is Friday. Let me start with politics. I was on Fox and Friends this morning and talked a lot of politics, beginning with the man I thought was not only the only Republican who could beat Hillary Clinton, but also the inevitable nominee for the Republican Party for the contest for the White House. Not so sure right now after this exchange with Megyn Kelly earlier this week. Roll that, Chris. You got it?
Knowing what we know now, would you have authorized the invasion?
I would have, and so would have Hillary Clinton, just to remind everybody, and so would have almost everybody that was confronted with the intelligence they got.
Say what? Say what? Knowing what we know now, Jeb Bush would have authorized the invasion of Iraq, that catastrophic, disastrous invasion of Iraq. You know, he has evolved his answer over the past few days and finally came to the conclusion that with that hypothetical, knowing what we know now, he would not have authorized the invasion of Iraq. But it took Governor Jeb Bush a week to get there. Now, I, including many of you and Hillary and John Kerry and others, supported the invasion of Iraq in 2003 because my president asked me to believe what he said he believed, that Saddam Hussein, the ruler of Iraq, was developing weapons of mass destruction, including nuclear weapons. Now, the intelligence at the time, frankly, looked shaky. But we all suspended our disbelief. We supported that disastrous war, a war that absolutely unhinged the Middle East, because we thought that the president was correct, that Saddam Hussein in Iraq was developing weapons of mass destruction. Now, to say that you would have supported the invasion anyway, even if you knew Saddam had no weapons of mass destruction, that is taking brotherly loyalty too far. I understand that Jeb is now backtracking, but isn't it true that the man who looked so inevitable in terms of being the Republican nominee now looks vulnerable? He no longer looks inevitable. I mean, I certainly wouldn't count him out yet. He's backtracking, but the aura that Jeb was the guy, I think, is forever dissipated. You can tell me what you think about that one. The other thing I want to talk about is what happened with George Stephanopoulos. Let me start that story by relating something that happened 30 years ago, 1985. I can't believe it's 30 years ago. 1985, after working for ABC News for 15 years, 15 great years, starting in 1970 to 1985, I was fired by ABC News. Now, bear with me. This is relevant to the George Stephanopoulos story because the official reason I was fired by ABC News in 1985 was the fact that I did not disclose making a $200 donation to a family friend. I was living summers and holidays in a small town, Marion, Massachusetts. I was fired for not disclosing a $200 donation I made to that friend who was running for mayor of nearby New Bedford, Massachusetts, in a nonpartisan mayoral campaign. So I gave $200 to the friend who came to a cocktail party that my wife at the time, Cece, and I were having at our home in Marion, Massachusetts. He came, he said he was running for mayor, I gave him a $200 check, never even thinking about it. But ABC News used that donation as the excuse to fire me. Now, the real reason I was fired was because I was estranged at the time from my boss, Rune Arledge, who was the president of ABC News. I was estranged from Rune, who had been a dear friend of mine, one of my best friends for many years. But I was estranged from Rune because I complained publicly after Rune spiked a colleague of mine at 2020, a story about the Kennedy brothers' relationship with Marilyn Monroe. The Kennedy story never ran, I alleged at the time, because of Rune's relationship with the Kennedy family. But he was so pissed off at me that when he heard that I made this $200 donation to this friend in this nonpartisan mayoral campaign, he fired me. The point is that ABC News treated my undisclosed $200 donation very harshly because the network wanted me out for unrelated reasons. That complaint over the story about the Kennedy family and their relationship with Rune Arledge. That's why they wanted me fired, but they fired me because I gave the $200 donation. Now, ABC News is bending over backward to minimize and forgive the $75,000 donation that George Stephanopoulos made to the Clinton Foundation. Now, ABC is obviously treating George Stephanopoulos much differently than they treated me because they wanted me out. And George, on the other hand, is central to ABC News and the network's recent success. I'm going to have a lot more to say about the dichotomy and the way ABC News responded to these donations. But let me take first some calls about the now very vulnerable candidate for the GOP nomination for president, Governor Jeb Bush, and his stumbling over whether or not he would have invaded Iraq, even if he knew that there were no weapons of mass destruction there. So let's start with Jill in New York. Hi, Jill. Thanks for calling. What's up?
Hi, Geraldo. Listen, Jeb Bush would have authorized the invasion if he had the same information that his brother had back then. And it's clear that that's what he meant by the way he answered the question. So all of this media attention to his answer is just more left-wing craziness. Listen to the way he answered. It's clear.
All right, Jeb, Crash, get the soundbite again. I want to get the answer to that question again Okay. So everyone can hear whether Jill's characterization is correct. Let me know when you
Knowing what we know now.
You got it? Oh, here it is.
Would you have authorized the invasion?
I would have, and so would have Hillary Clinton, just to remind everybody, and so would have almost everybody that was confronted with the intelligence they got.
I kind of stepped on Megan's question, but Jill, she says, knowing what you know now, and then goes on, would you have authorized the invasion?
She said, Ronaldo, but listen to the answer. He talks about the intelligence that they had back then. That's why he said, so would Hillary Clinton, because that was the intelligence everyone thought there were weapons of mass destruction. So at that point in time, it was a reasonable thing to do.
All right, Jill, I got you loud and clear. You say that It was an if he knew. Now what he? Okay. I got the defense. I just took him a week to get there. But let me ask Jill or Jane rather. Hi, Jane.
How are you, Geraldo?
Thank you for calling 866 Geraldo. What's on your mind?
I'm sick and tired of the Iran. All right, they already attacked two commercial vessels, and I think it was either just in 1 week or 2 weeks. No one's talking about it, and we still have Obama supporting Iran. What's the problem?
All right, so wait, now bring it back to Jeb Bush. You think that the Jeb Bush flap is...
What about Hillary Clinton? Why aren't they investigating her? They're asking Jeb Bush a hypothetical question, which is BS. Look what they're doing to Chris Christie. They're nailing him for that stupid bridge thing. But here is Hillary. Hillary walking around with all these emails unaccounted for, and the Benghazi thing, no one's asking anything. And also President Obama, the whole thing with Iran. Shooting at two, they were firing missiles at two commercial vessels within, I think, 1 or 2 weeks. And no one's mentioning that.
Well, we covered it extensively this morning on Fox News. You're right. The Iranians did attack a commercial vessel. They say that it sideswiped one of their oil rigs, but they were chased off by forces from the United Arab Emirates. So Jane says the attack on Jeb Bush is just because the media is left-wing.
It's a distraction, Geraldo. Don't play into the game.
And a distraction and playing into the game. I got it, honey. I got it. Thank you for calling. Very well stated. Jill and Jane. Terrific. All right. Stand by. I'm going to get to your calls. 866-Geraldo, 866-437-2536. Jeb Bush, is he still the inevitable nominee? Was he ever the inevitable nominee? There is no doubt, maybe liberal spin, but there's no doubt that Jeb Bush has had a very tough first week of his official campaign for the presidency. There's no doubt that he has now been rocked and has had to go back. Whether you're a liberal or conservative, you see that the inevitability, at least the invulnerability, that aura is off Jeb Bush. The other thing we're talking about is George Stephanopoulos. How should he be treated after it is now revealed that the chief political correspondent for ABC News also was a tremendous donor to the Clinton Foundation? $75,000 he gave. Erica Sol and I ran into George Stephanopoulos and his lovely and talented wife, Allie Wentworth, and their kids on a flight to Puerto Rico just last month. I'll tell you about that conversation. Talk more about how I got fired and he got applauded by ABC News. There's so much to talk about.
The sound of the city, Geraldo, where New York comes to talk, 77 WABC.
26 minutes after 10 o'clock. A lot going on this Friday. Noam is off on Geraldo, 77 WABC, 26 minutes after. Like I said, Friday, thank God it is Friday. We're talking about Jeb Bush, whether he has now damaged his what looked like inevitable run for the White House for the GOP nomination by saying he would have invaded Iraq even knowing what we know now. Then he backtracked. Took a week, though. People say the stumble may have cost him. I'll get to your calls momentarily. The reason they are saying the stumble may have cost him, basically, and most of the people saying the stumble may have cost him are left-wing liberal types who, you know, maybe are waiting to pounce on the Republican nominee anyway. But that what they're saying is not only did he say that he would have invaded anyway, but the specter now is that Jeb will be saddled with all of the real or perceived sins of his older brother, George W. Bush 43. Things like the bailout, things like the economic collapse, things like, the various controversies that George W. generated. Foremost among them, obviously, is the awful war in Iraq that resulted in so much tumult. Of course, President Obama didn't help things in Iraq when he prematurely withdrew all of our forces in 2011, but we're talking about 2003 and the invasion. And then also I'm talking about the treatment that George Stephanopoulos is getting now, really being pounded by his colleagues and critics in the media for the undisclosed revelation that he made $75,000 in donations, very substantial donations, to the Clinton Foundation. And the question is whether or not this undermines George's ability to do his job. And it may. I mean, by not informing his employer nor the public of that substantial donation, you know, everybody's got their secret favorites, their personal biases. But when you give a donation, that really crosses the line for a good reason, because money raises the specter that it's pay for play. That the reason you're giving the $75,000 donation is to buy continued access to the Clinton family, a family that George Stephanopoulos served so loyally as a political operator in the 1990s. So two things, Jeb Bush and George Stephanopoulos. Tim, you're first up. Yeah. What's up, man? Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you, Geraldo. I'm just calling because I think that we've got to recognize that Jeb Bush was doing what politicians do. He was answering the question that he wanted to answer. And he found out that that's one that he can't do that way. And, I think it begs the question about his fitness as a politician if he wasn't prepared to answer the question that was really posed to him, because that's got to be the single biggest question that he's going to have to deal with running for this office.
You know, I agree with that. I don't know how damaged he is, but of all questions to be prepared to answer, that Iraq question has to be the question you're ready to answer. Over 4,000 dead. What did we accomplish from that invasion? It was based on flawed intelligence, maybe sincerely, but you've got to be ready to answer that one. I agree, Tim. It seems borderline incompetent, but
right.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off there, brother. All right, you call back. You want to finish? 866-RALDO, 866-437-2536. I see the board is lighting up. I appreciate your help. These are very touchy questions on this Friday. We shall deal with them.
From New York, for New York, live, local, on it. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Two of the greatest guitar players ever, Eric Clapton and B.B. King. B.B. playing his famous Gibson guitar, Lucille. That's a duet. It's all about B.B. King today, the legendary blues singer who passed last night in Las Vegas, 89 years old, B.B. King. Thanks for the songs. Had a good run, though. Here's Mike in Cranford. We're talking about Jeb Bush and George Stephanopoulos. Mike, you're first up. What's on your mind, buddy?
Yeah, I don't see how you misinforming the people. Now, I've listened to Mark Levine, Hannity, Russ, all them guys been attacking Jeb Bush much harder than anyone. They don't like the man.
They don't. Who do they like? Who do they like?
Cruz. You know they're pushing for Cruz. They're pushing for Cruz, and sometimes they say Rubio, but then Carson. Even though they know that Carson's a throw.
So, Mike, what your position is that Jeb is getting it from the right and the left?
Yeah, he's getting it. He's getting it more from the right.
All right, got it. I hear you. I wonder if that's true. I don't know it for a fact, but I believe Ted Cruz has very little chance of getting the nomination. Marco Rubio is interesting. He's a young man, 43 years old. He reminds a lot of people of the Republican version of Barack Obama. Young senator, really untested. Kind of was a little wishy-washy on the issue of immigration, which is central to my thinking. But what do you think, 866 Geraldo? And you go to Jonathan in New York. What's up, Jonathan?
Hey, Geraldo. I have a thought both on the Stephanopoulos issue and this Jeb Bush. I think the problem that we have is that with respect to Bush, you know, you've got a situation here where he's really not getting out of his own head. Basically, he's trying to toe the line and straddle all sides here. He doesn't want to hurt his or alienate his base. If he really wasn't answering the question, I think if you would have asked George W. Bush that question, he would have said absolutely not. He would not have gone into Iraq knowing what we know today.
I agree.
But, and that's where his flaw is. His flaw is that he's thinking too much about not alienating his base rather than being a principal person, which is why people, I think, like Rubio with his whole comment about the gays, one of his family members or friends was getting married. I think with respect to Stephanopoulos, you've got a different issue over here, and that is, you know, Geraldo, you were on, you know, The Apprentice.
Right.
And all the machinations and all the scheming that was going on at The Apprentice. And that's just, you know, people fighting for charity, right, to get some money for their charity.
Right.
Now, if anyone thinks that Stephanopoulos, I don't know, I would be surprised if he gave a lot of charity to other organizations. There's definitely a pay-to-play going on over here. And it's not about cynicism. It's about reality and human behavior. Human beings do this. This is what they do. They always think about how they can advance their own causes and their own self-interest. And
you know, it's a harsh but realistic assessment, I think, Jonathan. I applaud it. I believe that you're a plain speaker. You know, I think that if you want to help global AIDS, there are a million ways to help fight AIDS globally that do not involve giving $75,000 to the former president, to the husband of the current Secretary of State. You know, I think that George really stepped in at this time. I appreciate the call, Jonathan. And he's going to have to fight his way out. I think that he is, as a result of what happened, diminished. I really like him. I have to hesitate, not hesitate to add that I really do like him. I started to tell you how Erica Sol and I ran into Stephanopoulos and his wife, Allie Wentworth. You know, she's very funny, very talented, but there's no doubt about their politics. Pleasant family, very, very, you know, agreeable in every regard. But I think that George is in major trouble. I think by not telling ABC News and not telling the public, more importantly, of these substantial donations to the Clinton Foundation, that George undermined his ability to do his job. I mean, as I said, we all have secret favorites. We all have personal biases. I tend to work mine out on the air. But when you give a donation, it really crosses the line because it really does raise the specter that what you're doing is paying to play, pay for play. You know, the historic connections, that's one thing. Everybody's got historic connections. And his with the Clinton Foundation is one thing, but up until now, that historic connection has been a kind of a weak read in undermining George's credible objectivity as the network's principal political reporter. But I think that these donations make it look like he's trying to buy continued access to the Clinton family. And it reminds everybody how loyal he was to the Clinton family as a rough, tough political operator back in the 1990s. You know, this is the moral of the Stephanopoulos story that I want to get to, and I'm going to return to your calls, which I appreciate. If Bret Baier, the anchor of Fox News, or if Megyn Kelly, or if Chris Wallace, Fox News Sunday, or if Bill O'Reilly made the same donation, $75,000, to, say, an educational foundation run by Jeb Bush, there's no doubt that the liberal mob, the wolves, would have been howling in front of Fox News. There's no doubt. You know, good for the goose, good for the gander. I think that he's going to have to fight his way out, and I'm not sure how he gets out. How do you get out of that non-disclosure? He's apologized? I think we even have, Chris, you have that apology? If you do, let me know. But let me get back to your calls. Aaron in Brooklyn, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Regarding weapons of mass destruction, this is very brief. If all of these people... full-blown war, and they said, but all of our sources, I mean, everybody, our sources, and it wasn't everybody, but a lot, our sources told us, what does it say about the culling process for these sources that the Mathis Party was kicked out, Iraq went into, has gone into decay?
It's destroyed. The country is destroyed. We upended it, we broke it, and now, they say, Colin Powell says, when you break it, you own it. We ran away from it in 2011. I think that is a great failure on Barack Obama's part. But look at
the start. I mean, Tavis Smiley, your friend, actually had a very, very complete discussion about Iraq with some general in 2007. He says, when we got, they didn't know what they were doing. When they got rid of the Ba'athist Party, it was a mess. But getting back to my original point, what does it say that about their sources? That everybody said, a lot of people say, but anybody who listened to our sources, well, what does that say about the calling process of everybody's sources?
Well, I agree. I mean, how bad were reporters? I mean, I think a lot of it, and Aaron, excellent call, and I appreciate it. When the drum beats of war, when the leader starts beating the drums of war and invoking patriotism and the need to defend our national honor and our national security and the weapons of mass destruction heading our way, it is very difficult to stop in your tracks and say, I'm not going there. I am absolutely not supporting this war based on this shaky evidence. Colin Powell later saying through an aide that his presentation, General Powell's presentation as Secretary of State to the United Nations, is his most embarrassing chapter of his adult life. I can see why. But all of us fell for it, or we held our nose and we went for it. Nobody really believed. I mean, did you believe that we proved beyond a reasonable doubt that Saddam Hussein was pursuing a weapon of mass destruction? And, did you support the invasion of Iraq in 2003? It's easy to look back at 2015 and say, 12 years ago, I would have done that based on the evidence. But now, looking back and how terrible that war was, I mean, we made a terrible mistake. All of us made a terrible mistake. And a lot of the reporting that was done, and I think that's what Aaron was alluding to, supporting that, like Judy Miller's story out of Africa that Saddam Hussein, with that yellow cake uranium stuff and these rods for making bombs on the front page of the New York Times. I mean, that helped us also get into this. There was some, but it's hard. My point is, it's hard to deny the president of the United States when he invokes patriotism and national crises to mobilize the military of the United States. You don't want to look unpatriotic, and you chicken out. I chickened out the Iraq. I totally chickened out. I look back, I paid the price personally, in the sense that for the next 11 years, my life was totally disrupted with those 11 trips to Iraq to cover that war, and I saw a lot of good men, better men than me, get killed or chopped up in that war. And you look back on it now, what did we accomplish? Nothing other than to disadvantage the United States with a catastrophic war that made no sense and was not supported by the evidence. And all of us bear some of that shame, some of that responsibility. The point is, Jeb Bush should have spoken as I am speaking now when asked that question by Megyn Kelly. He should have started. His lead should have been, my God, of course I would not have authorized the invasion of Iraq, knowing that he did not have, Saddam Hussein did not have weapons of mass destruction. I'm not an idiot. I wouldn't have disadvantaged my country by disrupting, a nation that was acting as a good check and balance against Iran in the region. I would not have destroyed Iraq as we know it. Jeb should have said that. He didn't say that. He said he would have done it anyway. So would Hillary have done it anyway? And then you look at that, you say, really? I don't think so.
Geraldo, live, local. Today's most important New York stories, only on 77 WABC.
5 minutes to 11 o'clock. We're going to talk about the garbage in the subways, but we're talking politics. George Stephanopoulos, Jeb Bush, and Joe's on the line from Philly. Hey, Joe, how you doing?
Geraldo, I'm doing great. And I got to tell you, before I tell you my opinion of Mr. Stephanopoulos, that I have the highest amount of respect for you because I believe that you are as close to middle of the road as any broadcaster.
I try. You know what they say, right? About middle of the road, that's where you roadkill.
Yeah, this is true. But, where I think George Stephanopoulos is so disingenuous is because he's making a major contribution to what is supposed to be a charity. Now, if you're making a major contribution to a charity, you've got to do some due diligence in terms of the expense ratios of that charity to deem if it really is a charity. As a, for instance, like a Big Brothers or Salvation Army, they have single-digit expenses and 90-plus percent goes to the charity. On the Clinton Foundation, it's closer to the opposite, which makes it not a charity, but basically a political endeavor. And Stephanopoulos gave that money for a purpose of currying favor, because as a charity, the Clinton Foundation is nothing more than a wolf in sheep's clothing. And for him to say anything other than it was for a charitable endeavor, I think is totally disingenuous. And I think that his credibility is shot more than Brian Williams.
Wow. Okay, Joe. Excellent call. I appreciate it. Now, I don't know enough about the Clinton Foundation to be as unequivocal as Joe in condemning it as just a kind of a shell to forster the political goals of the Clinton family. I can't say that. I don't know that. But I do know that it is absolutely correct that you don't give a $75,000 donation. I'm a big, philanthropist, relatively speaking. I raise a lot of money. I know who donates to me. I mean, are they currying favor? Are they giving to the cause? And my cause is beyond reproach. This time, it does seem as if George could have made a contribution to AIDS directly without going through his pals in the Clinton family. We'll be back with your calls.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Everybody, let's have some fun. You only live for once, and when you're dead, you're done.
Let the good time roll.
Let the good time roll.
And let them roll on.
I don't care if you're young or old.
Get the good time roll.
Let the good times roll. They're not going to be so good because B.B. King is gone. He passed last night at the age of 89. B.B. King there with Bobby Blue Bland. Let the good times roll. Yes, sir. Welcome back to the show. 8 minutes after 11 o'clock. Right here on 77 WABC. Just a heads up at the bottom of the hour. Noam Layden is off today. That's the bad news. The good news is Ann Coulter will be taking his seat in about 20 minutes. And will be with me for the last half hour of the program. Talking about two very prominent people, the ABC political chief, George Stephanopoulos, in hot water, in a real jam, after it was revealed that he gave $75,000 in contributions to the Clinton Foundation. Jeb Bush, the former governor of Florida, younger brother of Bush 43, looking shaky right now over this whole botched answer to the question of Iraq. You know, to slip as he did, if it was a slip, and say we should have supported the war, even knowing now that Hussein had no weapons of mass destruction, I think that takes brotherly loyalty too far. Now Jeb, of course, is backtracking. He's given four different answers, though, this week. It makes them look vulnerable. It makes him look no longer inevitable. I thought he was the inevitable Republican nominee. I still think he's the Republican to beat Hillary Clinton, and I would not count him out, but there's no doubt that he has been damaged. What do you think? 9 minutes after 11 o'clock, let's start with Jeff in New Jersey. Hey, Jeff, thanks for calling. What's up?
Hi, Geraldo. How are you?
Good, man.
I keep hearing this refrain about, the Iraq war was a mistake because there were never any weapons of mass destruction. But that sounds a little revisionist because did Saddam Hussein not gas the Kurds? And chemical weapons and biological weapons are also weapons of mass destruction.
Well, you be honest to yourself, Jeff, and think whether or not Saddam Hussein's gassing of the Kurds, and I think it was in the 1980s, would have been enough to justify the United States invasion as disruptive as it was in 2003.
No, I don't think we ever should have gone to war in Iraq. I think we should have concentrated only in Afghanistan.
Amen.
But the thing is that, people seem to forget what Saddam Hussein actually did do. And
oh, he was a punk, and the world is better off that he's gone. But I tell you, I think that in honesty, and this sounds very controversial, thanks to your call, Jeff, I think I would have preferred Saddam Hussein to continue in power as compared to what happened as a result of our ousting Saddam Hussein and destroying the army of Iraq that was the counterweight to the army of Iran, remember. All right, let me just take a divergence here because I don't know if you ever take the subways, but I take my daughter, so she loves to see the mosaics and the stations, and I take her around she loves being a real city kid and learning a way around. But the garbage, I mean, to see rats on the tracks is really something that it's really sickening. I don't know how, I mean, we have millions of people taking the subway every day. So many people, though, use, maybe it's because they're disgruntled in their life or whatever it is, they use the tracks on the subway cars as their trash bin. And it's just disgusting. Anyway, Scott Stringer is screaming about the trashy record of the MTA, and the City Hall Bureau Chief of the New York Daily News, Jennifer Firmino, did a great take on it. Subway trash pickup stinks, is her headline on page two of today's paper. Jennifer, welcome. So who do you blame for the filthy subways?
Well, you know, Scott Stringer, he looked at the subways for a year and found that in a lot of cases, the MTA wasn't even following their own rules in terms of how often they're cleaning them. They should be, the tracks should be cleaned at least once every 3 weeks, and only 3% of the stations that he looked at, like 276, only 3% of 276 were being cleaned that often. And some far less. The Barclay station, which is really a very busy station, that went, I think it was 3 months without being cleaned at all.
So, yeah, you say here 4 months. 4 months without being cleaned,
oh,
122
yeah,
bags of trash. That's the Barclay
yes.
Center, one
it,
of the most important stops.
Bags.
I mean, that's that is gross to me.
It's gross. Pretty gross, yes.
You know, I remember during, I go way back, you're a kid compared to me, but I go back to the John Lindsay administration, where John Lindsay, the mayor in the late 60s, 1970, he used to, if he saw someone littering, he'd run up to them and say, how can you be littering your city? And, you know, we don't have that ethic
right.
anymore, it seems to me. I blame the MTA for not picking up the trash, but don't we blame the riders, the strap hangers first for, you know, that's a couple of tons of filth?
Yeah, you know, it really is. And I used to actually cover the MTA, and one of the big debates is, should they ban eating on the subway? And people don't want it. You know, some people have really long rides, but there is sort of this thought that if you couldn't eat on the subway, the rat problem would get a lot better because, you know, you're dropping food, you don't finish your sandwich, and you put it in the garbage. That's like a great meal for a rat.
A great meal. Marty saw, he was just on the Lexington Avenue line, a guy eating a whole chicken. I mean, like a whole Boston...
A whole chicken, and he brought... he also brought biscuits with him.
And the biscuits.
But, I mean, Geraldo, really, when you look down at those subway stations and see the pile of dirt, food, newspapers, discarded coffee containers, you wonder where people's... You know, what happens to
manners.
Their personality
what to
when
manners?
They get underground.
Oh, it's horrible. So, Jennifer, how'd you get this beat, anyway?
How did I get the City Hall beat?
Well, it was not City Hall beat. I mean, the subway built from the
subway. I cover City Hall, and it's one of the big issues, you know.
Well, let me ask you, but before I lose you, what about the Second Avenue subway? When does it open? Where will it run from where to where?
So it's opening, I think, by late next year, the first phase will open. But it's really only three stops. It starts at, like, 86. And it won't even, it'll just be sort of an extension to the Q train. And then, you know, it's three stops, and it's not very much. Then they want to do the second half, which they don't have the money for, and that will go up to 125th Street. They've dug the tunnels, but they don't have the money to actually do anything else. That's what a big fight is over right now, actually. The MTA wants $1 billion from the city, and the city has not agreed to do it.
So the money has to come from the city government to fund the MTA.
No, it's, you know, it's a state agency, but the MTA's argument is like, look, we want to do the second, you know, the first section's done, they're like 86th Street down to 57th. But, you know, the second half going up to 125th Street, they don't have the money for it, and they want the city to
pay. So all that disruption around 96th, they're just close to my house, 96th and Lex, that's just for the hole in the ground right now.
Well, no, that's for those stations are going to come. Your part, you said where you're in the 80s, you're good. You're going to have your station. Like, it should open in, like, a year. It's the second half. You know, the goal of
so
it
Spanish
is
to Harlem doesn't get
downtown.
There. Right.
Right.
I agree.
Harlem doesn't have theirs yet. And it's not even going to go all the way downtown. I mean, the idea is that it would go 125th Street all the way down, you know, like down by City Hall. But, I mean, they're very far from that goal. Right
and where's the mayor today? Where is he?
He's in California. He's having a down day. He's with his daughter. So yesterday he spoke at Berkeley. He spoke at his daughter's school, and he had a fundraiser today. He's just kind of enjoying the California fresh air with his daughter. He's not really doing much.
So between Bloomberg and de Blasio, who was out of the city more?
Well, definitely Bloomberg, because he had his own flight. You know, he had his own plane, and he would go away every weekend. De Blasio goes away, but not every weekend. But he does go away. I think we tallied it up. This year it was 21 days he's been out of the city, including personal days, including trips to D.C. lobbying, you know, for the city's interest.
Is there a sense that he's out of the city too much?
He, you know, there was just a poll that came out that there were more New Yorkers that think he, you know, he's traveling too much. You know, the difference with him and Bloomberg, though, is he's very open. Like, we knew Bloomberg went to Bermuda on the weekends, but his schedule wouldn't say that. It would just say, Mayor Bloomberg is out of town. With Mayor de Blasio, his schedule would say, Mayor de Blasio is in Providence. He's got family in Providence. He tells us when he's going to see them. He'll tell us, you know, he went to Puerto Rico with his wife, and he said the mayor is going to Puerto Rico with his wife. You know, so he tells us, and he gets maybe, you know, hit a little bit more for it because we know about it. With Bloomberg, there was this sort of, it wasn't really a mystery. Everybody knew where he was going, but he wasn't, you know, as open about it. He just
well, he didn't have to fly public transportation. That was
he had his own plane.
Jennifer Firmino, the City Hall Bureau Chief of the New York Daily News. We appreciate it. Subway trash pickup stinks. Thanks, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Coming back to the issue du jour, Jeb Bush and George Stephanopoulos.
Get Geraldo now. Get in on New York's most important stories. 866-GERALDO, 77-WABC.
Okay, welcome back to the program. I am delighted to welcome back to the show live and in studio with me the author of Mug, of Never Trust a Liberal Over Three, especially a Republican, Ann Coulter, these and many other number one best-selling books on the New York Times list, and here she is live. Hi.
Hello. They weren't all number one, but they were all New York Times bestsellers.
Every one of them.
10 so far, and the next one comes out in 2 weeks, and I plan to start right here.
So that's delightful, but, you know, interesting. Why don't you start on, like, the Today Show or Good Morning America, the big network platforms? Are you in... on the outs with them?
Well, as I was ranting to you 5 minutes ago off air, this is why I've been stalking you, because you are the media guru. You've had 9 lives. And, I've written 10 New York Times bestsellers. I write them myself. I research them myself. If I were a liberal, there would be Broadway plays about me, Hollywood documentaries. In fact, I couldn't write any more books. I'd be accepting honors so often. And instead... No, I'm just pretty much blacklisted every place. I'll be starting. In fact, I spent all day yesterday. I wanted to tell you about the most magnificent shooting range I've ever been to. I'm doing a Vice video to launch my book. Yes, a Vice video. We went shooting at this place.
On HBO?
I don't know if they'll run it there, but the Vice video is online. I mean, a lot of people watch them. It's not exactly my target audience, and I don't know where the Today Show is, but no, I will not be starting on George Stephanopoulos or the Today Show or any place else. But when we get off air, I'm going to ask you what I should do. Oh, and there's one other thing I'm doing, which you're going to like, right before the book comes out, which is June 1.
So, and what's the title of the new one?
Adios America, the Left's Plan to Turn Our Country into a Third World Hellhole.
Oh, I will definitely like that one.
It is a magnificent book. The week before, which is right after Memorial Day, in studio audience in Miami with Jorge Ramos.
Oh, really? That's
yes.
Fabulous. That's
yeah, but
fabulous.
Then that'll be it. Then I'll sit alone in my apartment and hope you call me.
I will. But so what do you think of Hillary Clinton's very bold suggestion that not only should we normalize the lives of the undocumented immigrants, but we should provide a path to citizenship?
Well, you know, I'm...
Which I obviously endorse.
Dying to talk to you about
this.
I don't think I could do it without talking about the book. So if you could just hold that
question for
2 weeks.
I'll hold all the immigration thoughts. But why do you think you're boycotted? Ann Coulter, my guest.
I think it's because their original approach to me, I mean, the media is liberal, and I will admit, perhaps I have invited this by writing all my books denouncing the media. Maybe that's not the best public relations strategy. But at first, they used to interview me because they wanted to destroy me. You know, they wanted to turn me into Timothy McVeigh or at least Mark Furman. So they'd invite me on, be nice to me, and then the cameras go on, and they'd pick some line from the book and attack me. And it never really worked because I was allowed to talk back. And
you're very glib. You're very fast on your feet. You also have a very substantive backing to your arguments, however I disagree with you.
Thank you. And so it never worked. And then about 3 books back, even though I always say liberals can't learn, you know, viruses can learn, parasites can learn, liberals can't learn. The one thing they were able to learn is don't attack Ann Coulter, pretend she does not exist. And the only satisfaction I have is it's got to be killing them not to respond to these books.
But by their not responding, that's one thing. Not putting you on the air is commercially harmful.
To
everybody wants everybody wants their work to be read if they are writing in public. So, I mean, you have
I don't
an
have
audience.
A radio show. I don't have a TV show. If people don't know the book is out, it's kind of hard. And oh, and by the way, I've been trying to get around this, though you're going to tell me what to do as soon as the show is over. I'm on Twitter. I love Twitter. But somebody told me, oh, no, Facebook is much bigger. You got to get a Facebook page. So for the past year, I've been trying to get a Facebook page. But Geraldo, I can't get Ann Coulter because he keeps saying, this could be the name of a celebrity. No, It's me. Please let me send me.
So the real Ann Coulter can't get a.
No, there are like 100 imposters. I know the angel investor to PayPal. I finally emailed him. I never bother him because he's not really involved anymore. I described what was going on as a catch 22. I can't prove on me. He said, resend the same email, but take out the expletives and I'll forward it to someone at PayPal. Well, that was 3 weeks ago. I still can't get my own Facebook page.
Ann Coulter is my special guest. She's got a new book coming out, but she's talking now. She came to me for some media advice. She does get attacked. I get attacked also. The great thing about my being attacked that Ann doesn't have is I have this microphone. Mm-hmm. So after this brief commercial and news break, I'm going to attack someone who has recently attacked me. I'm going to use the Ann Coulter page. You hit me, I'm going to hit you back, and I'm going to hit you back harder than you hit me. That comes right after this. Ann Coulter, stand by.
Geraldo on the 77 WABC app. Get it before you really need it. WABCradio.com.
Well, my baby, I hope we meet again. You won't be so evil. You won't have too many men. You're gonna miss me, baby. Yeah, you're gonna miss me. Yeah, you're gonna miss me, woman, when I'm dead. No.
We miss him already, B.B. King. He passed last night, 89 years old. The legendary blues singer, songwriter, guitarist. You can hear his Gibson right there. You can hear Lucille. He made that guitar cry, shout, sing. Welcome back. Geraldo here along with Ann Coulter. Delighted to welcome the New York Times best-selling author. Hi.
Hello.
Can you give me 2 minutes? I have to punch someone
dying
to push
to
me
hear
around.
This.
You know, I recently bought a new apartment. Erica and I bought a new apartment. We have decided that reluctantly we have to leave Edgewater, New Jersey, and relocate in New York because I can't pay taxes on both sides of the river. It's really silly. So we're moving back. You know, Saul, our almost 10-year-old, is in grade school, so we're staying as close to her school. We live very close on the Upper East Side. So anyway, the New York Observer, the weekly newspaper, covers real estate. People love reading about who bought what. So anyway, a writer for the New York Observer, Chris Pomorski by name, wrote about the purchase that Erica and I made of the apartment. But he used the occasion to attack me in a way that was filled with lies and misrepresentations. And I swear to God, if I see Chris Pomorski on Madison Avenue, he better cross the street if he sees me. Let me tell you, so I bought the apartment. So he goes into, Geraldo Rivera currently reports for Fox News, but is doubtless better known for his TV tabloid vehicle, Geraldo. And he featuring such edifying tales as men in lace panties and the women who love them. Okay, so he got that shot in. Then he goes on and he complains about Trayvon Martin, my comments about Trayvon Martin. Then he complains about the selfie. Remember, this is a real estate story. Then he goes on, and this is where I really, really got me pissed off. He talks about going on Sean Hannity's show from Baltimore during the riots, and he says that I engaged in a bit of, quote, parasitic parachute reporting in Baltimore. I guess by that he means that I came in from out of town like every other journalist who doesn't work for the Baltimore Sun. Parasitic parachute reporting, that's one I owe you, Chris. And then he talks about how I managed to characterize a group of peaceful protesters as vandals and to visibly offend the state Senate majority leader that I was trying to interview. So, Chris Pomorski, you are a low-life piece of crap. You are an irresponsible, lying, pinko, cheap shot artist who deceitfully, unethically used the occasion of my buying an apartment to lie about me. And to say that you go on to say that I use the profits from race baiting. This is the worst part of it. It's all in a day's work for Mr. Rivera, who learned on his talk show that stoking racial tensions could be entertaining and profitable. He and his wife, Erica, have just used some of those profits to buy the four-bedroom apartment. You accuse me of race baiting and then using the profits to buy my apartment? Dude, I'm telling you this. Like, I like your boss, Jared Kushner. But if he likes your brand of ideological, left-wing, politically correct slander, then you'll keep your job. But I'm telling you, buddy, don't cross my path. anytime soon. You lied when you said I visibly offended the state Senate Majority Leader Catherine Pugh, who you didn't name because you didn't know her name, because you didn't spend the 2 minutes to find out her name. Senator Pugh, who I interviewed several times with deference and respect, was as offended by the out-of-control protesters as I was because they were preventing her and other responsible voices from being heard. And to say I falsely characterized peaceful protesters as vandals, yeah, those are the same peaceful protesters who destroyed West Baltimore, looted, burned, heaved rocks at cops and first responders. Chris Pomorski, you are a lying swine. Just like Ann Coulter would, right?
That was excellent. You know, I'm going to have to buy an expensive condo now just so I can be attacked. And by the way, your little thing you just read, it reminds me how sneaky, I'm really looking forward to the book tour now, how sneaky reporters are. That business about the parachuting, parasitic.
Yeah.
As you say, you're a reporter. You went to where the action was and interviewed people. But reporters
and
have
stayed
this
a
way,
week, by the way.
Reporters have this way of being accusatory when you're just doing your job. And the big one that it's like the standard, they must have this as a typewriter key, self-promoting. Well, you know, Winston Churchill was self-promoting. We're people of ideas. We're trying to get the ideas out there. Of course we are. What does that even mean?
Ann Coulter, the number one Times bestseller, the author of Demonic, How the Liberal is Endangering America, Guilty, Liberal Victims and Their Assault on America. If Democrats had any brains, they'd be Republicans. Godless, the Church of Liberalism. How to Talk to a Liberal if You Must. Treason, Liberal Treachery from the Cold War to the War on Terrorism. Slander, Liberal Lies about the American Right. And High Crimes and Misdemeanors, the Case Against Bill Clinton. Talk for a minute about the case against George Stephanopoulos. What do you think? Is he in trouble? Should he be for giving $75,000 to the Clinton Foundation, Ann Coulter?
And then interviewing the author of a book attacking it without revealing that. I mean, yes, in my book Slander, I went through my second massive New York Times bestseller. I went through all of these people. I mean, the revolving door between Democratic administrations and the mainstream media is shocking. You can't imagine the equivalent of a Republican.
We have Dana Perino, who was the press secretary for George W. Bush on Fox, a very prominent role she plays.
And Fox News, that's the only place you could possibly in a million years see that. You will not see, you know, Ari Fleischer or whatever his name was, you know, hosting the biggest show on ABC.
You mean on the big network?
Yeah, of course. And the rest of the media. I mean, you can't.
I think there is
the
a revolving door.
Media.
I think there is a revolving door between the media and politics in the same way there's a revolving door between the Pentagon and the defense contractors.
Right.
When you deal in ideas, I think that I have no problem.
No. Except it's a one-way street. Whenever a Republican does it, there's a huge hue and cry. I mean, a big deal was made, and I this was a book I wrote 10 years ago, so I'm having trouble remembering the details, but I remember there was a lot of complaining that Diane Sawyer, as she had just graduated from college, and she was like an intern in the Nixon administration, and wow, every time she reported, that would come up. And meanwhile, Clinton's bag man is hosting the morning show on ABC. He's hosting debates among the Republican primary candidates. Come on. That's like having Sean Hannity or me host the debates for the Democrat primaries.
Oh, that would be fun.
That would be fairer because as far as I know, Hannity and me have never worked for a president.
So that's interesting. So do you believe that Rens Priebus, the chairman of the Republican National Committee, is in the right when he says he refuses to allow George Stephanopoulos to moderate any of the debates?
Oh, absolutely. I would be a little tougher than that. Which one was Candy Crowley working for? Is that ABC or CNN?
CNN.
Okay, CNN should be completely excluded for that. That was the most shocking unfairness I've ever seen. I mean, for a moderator in a presidential debate, incredibly important presidential debate, and she claims that Obama is the winner of a point, and then 2 hours after the debate says, oh, I was wrong? To this day, I'm in my shower thinking, what do you do in a debate like that? Because you'll remember, and your listeners will probably remember, when Rick Lazio merely walked across the stage to hand a piece of paper, ask Hillary to sign a pledge or something. Oh, the New York media exploded. Oh, this macho bullying. What was Romney supposed to do? That was the most unfair. Oh, my gosh. No. CNN, did you say?
CNN, yeah.
See, I watch MSNBC and Fox. I have no idea what happens on CNN.
Really? Why MSNBC over CNN?
Oh, my gosh. It's hilarious. Because CNN is like MSNBC. Well, actually, CNN's getting better. I like Don Lemon. There are a few other. Jake Tapper. He's a very good reporter.
He's good, yeah.
But at least, so that's more recent. But usually it's like CNN, MSNBC, but more boring. All the liberal bias without the hilarity.
But you seem, though, I must say, sincerely concerned over the fact that the mainstream media is ignoring you or boycotting you. I mean, I sense real frustration there.
Yeah.
That goes beyond just your usual, you know, glib attack on the left.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's why I showed up in studio so I can talk to you about this after the interview, but as long as there's a mic in front of me. I mean, what do you do? People think, They will put me in the same category as TV hosts who put books out.
Well, how about Bill Maher? Bill Maher, for instance.
Oh, I hope I'll do Bill Maher. I haven't done much of anything in the past year because I've been writing
my book. You
have
been,
though. And yeah, I'll probably do Bill Maher. I'm not sure Bill Maher or Vice are really my target market.
No, they're not. They're very your market.
I mean, I love them. I'd like everyone to read this book. I think it's a really important book and a really good book. But just how do you let people know it's out there? When the media's position is pretend she doesn't exist, pretend she doesn't exist.
that won't fly.
The headlines, the city's most pressing issues. Geraldo, today and every day, 77 WABC.
I'm here with Ann Coulter as we listen to B.B. King in the background, saying goodbye to B.B. You know, I was fired by ABC in 1985 after 15 years because of a $200 undisclosed donation I made to a nonpartisan mayoral candidate in New Bedford, Massachusetts.
You're kidding.
1985, ABC News. I mean, the real reason I was fired is that Rune and I were estranged. Rune Arledge, the boss, and I, who had been dear friends, were estranged because I complained about Rune's spiking a story about the Kennedy family, alleging that the brothers had a relationship with Marilyn Monroe. Rune said the story was unproven. He wasn't going to go with it. I alleged that he spiked the story
yeah,
because of his relationship with the Kennedy family.
That's what I love about you. You're a real reporter.
So I got fired, and they hooked it on this $200 donation.
But wow.
That was because they wanted me out. George Stephanopoulos is the opposite. They want him in, so they will minimize this $75,000 donation to the Clinton Foundation.
As he interviews the author of a book about the Clinton Foundation.
He should have disclosed it.
Yeah, that's pretty shocking.
But do you think the Clinton Foundation is really just a shell for their political aspirations?
And also for their monetary aspirations. I mean, the foundation, I think the most shocking fact, forget the apparent bribery involved. The most shocking fact is they collected $500 million. Of that, they paid employees $400 million. I think any ordinary person who hears that, and then, by the way, another $25 million was spent on travel for the employees. Any ordinary person hears that and says, oh, come on, this is a scam for them to pay themselves.
So you think Ann Coulter, my guest, her next bestseller is coming out in how long?
When? 2 weeks, June 1.
Are you going to come back for that?
Of course.
All right.
I want a full-hour debate with you. We may have to eat up the whole show with it.
Adios America is the book. It's going to go over great with me. But anyway, I find you very engaging, and I love the confidence and the research that goes into it. Have you ever seen B.B. King, by the way?
Yes, I have. Freshman year at Cornell, he played in Ithaca. It was fantastic.
So you're Cornell. What's the fight song for Cornell?
We're Big Red. I mostly know the fight song for my sorority, Delta Gamma, which I am not singing.
Ann Coulter has been my guest. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Goodbye, B.B. King. Thank you for the memories. Over 50,000 live appearances in his career. That's more than me. So from here on, where are you going?
Where am I going?
Are you staying in New York for a while?
Well, I have to get down to Miami for my big interview with Jorge Ramos.
Oh, that's right.
And that's right after Memorial Day weekend, so I'll go to Miami for Memorial Day.
So tune in for that. Ann Coulter, Jorge Ramos, and an audience of people who hate her.
It'll be great.
We love her here.
I'll win them over.
It wasn't even my story for 2020. It was Sylvia Chase. Thank you. Big reunion coming up. 2020 reunion coming up.